Well, thanks, James, and thanks to the ESA for inviting me here. I'd like to pick up on some of what James said, but add something. What I'm adding is, what do you do once they've arrived? You know, what do you do if they've arrived to such an extent that they're a pest and causing economic losses? In New Zealand, we use biosecurity very commonly as a word, and in that country, it's defined as keeping out the bad things, but managing the bad things after they've arrived, not just at the borders. And believe me, New Zealand has many, many bad things, many, many introduced plants, animals, and diseases. So that's what I'm going to talk about. What do you do after all those other processes that James has discussed have failed, and the animal has invaded, and it's become a pest? And I'm saying that by changing the way we grow our crops, not very seriously, we can maybe make quite a big difference. That's my theme. A few holiday pictures, first of all. This is a lovely volcanic area, half an hour from Lincoln University, very nice. This is the north of the South Island, where people go on holidays, very nice as well. And that's a mountain in the North Island, volcano, very nice. The reason I'm showing those, however, is that they're all invaded. They're all seriously invaded. And there's been major biodiversity loss in all those places, but in particular, they're invaded. As an example, New Zealand has 40 species of mammal. If you like mammals, that's great. But unfortunately, 38 of them are introduced. I don't know any country in the world with 38 out of 40 introduced mammals. Our forests are suffering greatly from ungulates living in them, for example. We don't have any native ungulates. So they're pretty pictures, but they're heavily, heavily invaded. So New Zealand, like other countries, does lots of things. You can use theory and ranking and modelling to try to predict what the next invader is. You can do things at the border to minimise risk. At the point of origin, you can try to prevent them leaving the point of origin. Work at the border to stop bringing things in, and of course attack the first arrivals very seriously. But after all, they get through, don't they? And in New Zealand, hundreds have got through, so you have to manage them after they've actually done damage even. Well, you can intercept them. Just to recap, if you could arrive in New Zealand for our meeting in next February, a biocontrol meeting, for example, you'll find little pretty dogs like that, but don't have an orange in your bag, whatever you do, otherwise you'll be in trouble. Or you can attack the first arrivals. This is Auckland, the largest city in New Zealand, being sprayed with Bacillus thuringiensis against early arrivals of painted apple moth. Population of Auckland went mad, of course, when that happened, you can imagine. Or you manage the invaders successfully. So many of these topics will come up at our meeting in February next year, so if you're coming, you'll be very welcome. That's the website. So the trouble is, if we manage these animals by improving biodiversity, it's a bit difficult if there isn't much biodiversity left to manipulate, and that is the case in a lot of monocultures worldwide, of course. We can restore biodiversity and ameliorate some of this damage, but in New Zealand we certainly need to, because there's very little left in the lowlands. Of those things we can do, of course, biological control is an ecosystem service, a very important one, if you add dollars to nature's services, it becomes an ecosystem service. That's the way I like to think about it. Predation occurs in forests. Quantify that economically and it becomes an ecosystem service. That's the distinction I like to make anyway. So biocontrol, therefore, can help us mitigate these serious invaders. To such an extent that when biocontrol works, it is absolutely outstanding. You may have seen this. This is a lake in Africa covered by the invasive weed water hyacinth. Could use herbicides forever, I suppose, but they didn't. They brought in a herbivore unique to that weed. And as you know, when biocontrol works, it's breathtakingly good. Like that. And I tell students at Lincoln, it's so good, it only takes 5 seconds. And they get their notebook out and write down, biocontrol takes 5 seconds. No, it's not really. They don't really write that down. But it's not as quick as 5 seconds, but believe me, when it works, it's very good. However, it does cost money. It doesn't always work as well as that, and it can go wrong. And if you come from Australia or you understand what's happening in Australian biocontrol, you'll be embarrassed to know about this animal, which is possibly the worst example of biocontrol in the world. And these animals are spreading along the highways of Australia now and are predicted to reach Perth in the southwest, even though they were released in northern Queensland. They're a major topic of discussion in magazines, but believe me, the cane toad is one of the worst examples of biocontrol, as everybody knows. It's gone mad, and it's very poisonous. that gland there contains quite serious poison. So it does seem, therefore, doesn't it, agricultural monocultures are vulnerable, and they certainly are. That's where I work. It is a pretty picture, but not many tourists would spend weeks in this place because it's the Canterbury Plain where our university is, and everything green in that picture is non-native, actually. Every plant in that picture is non-native. Not true of the forests in the mountains, but it is true there. Massive biodiversity loss and replacement and substitution. We're not alone, that's Southeast England, a 500 hectare field with nothing green in springtime. That's Cotton in northern New South Wales in Australia. That field, when I took the photograph, is 1,000 hectares. One plant, and that debris is from last year's cotton, so it's monoculture in space and monoculture in time. So there's not many biological processes operating in there should an invader arrive. We have our own in New Zealand. That's a lovely vineyard taken at dawn. Nice for advertising wine, but monoculture gone mad. And our vineyards are quite full of several invaded pests, actually, leading to quite high pesticide use. So we can restore some of that biodiversity if we restore the right type. But we have lost so much, and it isn't just native plants. We've lost a lot of our biocontrol as well. And it can be difficult to detect. So we quite often use prey baits to see what the rates of a biocontrol in conventional fields and sometimes in organic fields too. So this is a little example. This is simply a dish of soil with tiny white eggs of a pest. It's carrot root fly, which is invaded. We leave it overnight and simply count the number that have disappeared, which we can attribute to predation. We do that in organic and conventional fields. We sometimes put a video camera on top and shine an infrared light on top of that dish. So this is winter time in New Zealand, July. It's 10 minutes to 9, it's dark. The image is black and white because it's infrared illumination. And these are those eggs of the carrot fly. And we play back the video the next day and we get some idea of what may be the predator that's eating them during the night time. And we know the video is good enough for us to tell the species. It's not difficult. This is a European earwig, or even though it's a male because of the curvature of the pincers. So time-lapse video can really get you some great data, which we've published on quite a lot. So that tells us, the first picture tells us how many have disappeared overnight. The second picture or video tells us what's doing the damage. When we do that for organic and conventional fields, for fly eggs, which you saw, and for green fly aphids, you don't need to do stats on this. This is the predation rate in one night in organic fields, and this is in conventional. We go further and work with resource economists, and the value of this level of predation in one night in organic fields is about $130 per hectare per year. So this has real value multiplied by the landscape scale. Just the eggs, never mind parasitoids, stinging aphids, and all the other guilds on the plant. This is one predator on one pest egg. If we do it for conventional fields, which as I showed you were the brown bars, which look pretty poor, they certainly are poor because we can attribute no economic value to them. Our monocultures really need help because we don't have much biodiversity in them. And that, these are the 15 conventional fields we worked in, and this is the economic value of biocontrol in those fields, and it doesn't take long to calculate that. Avoided cost means the pesticides, labour and diesel you don't need, and total avoided cost includes external cost, which is pesticides damaging human health and the environment. Human health and the environment are damaged in these conventional fields, pesticides are used, there's no economic value of that tiny level of biocontrol in those fields. No economic value, no environmental value, no money saved. In New Zealand, we're getting aware of this because our overseas markets don't like pesticides very much. And if you go to a UK supermarket, not sure what it's like in LA or San Francisco, this is a 2 meter wide sign, if you can read that, saying that they've banned over 60 pesticides in their food. New Zealand sends food and drink to these markets. If it sends a lot of pesticide in it, it gets sent back. So the pressures in New Zealand for handling invaders in a sustainable way don't come from the Kiwi people, they come from the overseas markets, actually. But if we put biodiversity back, which seems to help, how much and what type? One of the big debates in ecology at the moment. People used to think the more the better. A packet of wildflower seeds scattered in the orchard, 20 species, must be good, they used to think. Well, of course, that's rubbish. And we can have relationships where there's redundancy in the relationship, and after a point we add more species and no extra value comes. Or, as Bill Snyder will remind you in a half an hour's time, we could add more species where harm is done, then we actually get a negative effect of increasing biodiversity. And Bill will reflect on that. So you need science. You can't just whack in new biodiversity where it's disappeared and assume it's going to work, of course. We work in vineyards. They're not particularly resilient at the moment. They have new pests in them all over New Zealand. And in California, thanks very much, you've got the Australian light brown apple moth arrived quite recently, which is the main pest in New Zealand vineyards. We got it from Australia, so it's a pretty good invader, isn't it? And we work a lot on that animal. And I say to students, quite simply, if you want to improve biodiversity in your crop, try to get for predators and parasitoids, try to put in one or more of these components. Monocultures don't have shelter, nectar, pollen, or alternative prey. That cotton field in Australia had none of those. And I say to the students, to keep them awake, rearrange those words into a well-known phrase or saying, and they always remember SNAP. If they're writing an essay, they remember SNAP. It's so easy. So there's just the bare bones of how we can put in functional biodiversity back into an agricultural crop with biocontrol in mind. Doug Landis and others around the world, certainly Doug at Michigan State, is doing work like this and doing some great work on the Great Plains of looking at the value of endemic plants or locally native plants, and phenomenal figures of the numbers of species coming back in 1 square meter when you put in some of these single plant species. 20 pollinators and 200 predators and parasitoids per square meter. That is functional biodiversity if they're the right species. We started with non-native, nothing as fancy as Doug's work. We started with the European plant Alyssum, which you call sweet Alyssum in the USA. Works fine. It can quadruple biocontrol in vineyards by providing the N and P of SNAP, which is nectar and pollen. Mission Organics in California, of hundreds of acres of Alyssum, this is conservation biocontrol at the landscape scale. This is Alyssum, 30 or 40 yards apart, hoverflies are the target, and really they're getting those lettuces clean at harvest time of the lettuce aphid, with a simple addition of one species of biodiversity, as you might call it. We play around with Phacelia too, that comes from the hills of California. Excellent source of pollen, again, for hoverflies. This is a New Zealand vineyard. Tourists stop their cars and take photographs of these vineyards. This is Phacelia, and really, it isn't just a pretty picture like those early ones I showed you. This can get the light brown apple moth, which you heard about, below the economic spray threshold. The nectar it provides can bring that pest below the spray threshold, saving New Zealand vineyards $250 per hectare per year. We do the science behind it, we hope, but the pretty picture tells the story to the tourist. Buckwheat does the same. Again, the nectar provided to a braconid parasitoid killing the light brown apple moth can bring the pest below economic threshold. That braconid is now in quarantine in California, and I bet will be released quite soon against that pest. The pests we work on quite commonly are parasitoids. This one is attacking an aphid, but the principle's the same, and you all know that this is an aphelionid, I think. But the power of these to seek out and attack their prey is quite strong, as you've seen before, probably. The animal on your right is an aphid, the wasp is on the left. It turns around, rolls back the wings, the sting comes out, the muscles are pumping, you can see the muscles pumping here. One egg deposited, and that is biological control at its perfect best. But of course, that animal needs elements of SNAP, otherwise it cannot perform like that. There's the evidence, I mentioned this already. Buckwheat in vineyards at 1 row in 10, that's all. We use rubidium chloride to work out how far the parasitoid disperses from the buckwheat, and 1 vine row in 10 is quite adequate to achieve this. No pesticide needed when buckwheat's in the vineyard below the spray threshold. You have to spray when biodiversity is largely absent. So that's an applied result and is being adopted throughout New Zealand vineyards, I'm pleased to say. This predator is a brown lacewing shared with Australia, one of the most important and abundant predators in New Zealand lowlands, and it's taking nectar, obviously, avidly, from a beautiful buckwheat flower. And this is a nice picture too of the nectar glistening. This is the commonest predator in lowland Australia and New Zealand arable fields, and we can get this animal to be a predator 10 times better with this simple resource of nectar. The result is the lacewing lays eggs, and the result of that, of course, is the larva hatches, and this larva is only about 1.5 meters long. That also is the power of biocontrol. This aphid, a pea aphid, is about 10 times its biomass, but the aphid is doomed. So if we can get those hoverflies and lacewings and parasitoids to lay 10 or 15 times as many eggs and live 10 times as long, which we do, then of course this is the dynamic result you get. What does that mean in terms of time? So in New Zealand agriculture, then we're trying to do a Doug Landis, or I think he and I developed the idea together. We're trying to put native plants in these vineyards for the first time. That is not a tourist picture. Every tree is European, the grass is European, and the vines are covered in plastic. That's not an attractive piece of agriculture. But we can do things in the shelter belts, the gullies, the fence lines and the roadsides with New Zealand native plants, like Doug is trying in Michigan. And believe me, if you want to bring tourists in, then after a few years, I think if I was a tourist, I might visit that vineyard. Every green thing now, apart from the ryegrass and the vines, is an endemic New Zealand plant. I'll skip that and that as well. So what we're saying is, in the future in New Zealand, there is hope. There's an ordinary vineyard. That could be Argentina, it could be California, ryegrass and Vitis vinifera and nothing else. Why don't we just transform that based on the research we do and put some endemic plants in under the vines to provide nectar and pollen, let them spread sideways and they're likely to suppress, introduce weeds if they're competitive, put phacelia in, as we heard, where necessary, and let it come to full flower, and then bring back some more endemic plants that do have some ecological role, but certainly do encourage ecotourism. So biosecurity, dealing with invaders, actually has the added value, if you do it in this way, of having a massive ecotourism advantage. New Zealand gets 4 million tourists per year, and they're already beginning to visit these vineyards in quite large numbers, which is encouraging. So what we're saying is new tools for old problems. This is a video, nothing to do with biodiversity, but this woman in this video has found a new tool for parking. New tool for old problems. Nothing to do with biodiversity, but I still laugh when I see that. I've played it 30 times. So we need to use what Doug Landis and others do. We need to engineer the landscape, put back what was disappeared, put back more than has disappeared, actually, to see if we can soften the impact of these invaders. We talked about it in a book a few years ago. In New Zealand, we have a massive number of massive commitment from wine growers. As I play this animation, this is a vineyard valley in which we work. Not just one grower, but a valley. Where I work is 1 hour south. You'll see the date change. You'll see the numbers of collaborating growers appearing, and you'll see the numbers of endemic plants put in the vines by those growers. And it's quite impressive, really, the way it's the collaboration amongst these people. It is impressive. Look at that. Nothing happened. We couldn't get any growers. Yes, we can now. Sorry, just stop. Here we are then, look. There they come at last. The date is changing, the collaborating growers are appearing, the number of endemic plants going in, and this is about 50 kilometres, this axis. So biodiversity, dealing with invaders, can be sold to the agriculturalists, they can adopt it. They're saving money, they're saving variable costs, and ecotourism is becoming a major facet of that valley now, looking at endemic biodiversity. And the TV cameras have been filming it quite a lot recently. We've put in the world's first biodiversity trails in vineyards where tourists come to see where we're dealing with invaders, but they're actually learning about their endemic, if they're Kiwi, biodiversity at the same time. And there's no vineyards in the world that are doing that. There are even puzzles for school kids to learn about their own biodiversity in a vineyard rather than in a native habitat. And they really enjoy that, these children. So that's my message. We've got to deal with them after they're in. And if we can deal with them using ecological knowledge with selective biodiversity, we can even build another ecosystem service onto that, which of course is tourism. And I'll stop at that point.